I'm just going with the flow, so.
You're listening to Three Wise Truck Guys from Key Advisors.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's Keith Healy, and welcome back to the Three Wise Truck Guys. I believe this is episode 26 of our podcast, and thank you for joining in with us. We've got the usual suspects back with me today. We've got Mark Martinsik in sunny Birmingham, Alabama. Roll Tide today, Mark. Is that right?
Roll Tide. It's about ready to kick off.
There we go. There we go. And in fabulous Fort Worth, John Whitnell came back out of hiding, and he's joining us again today. So welcome back, John.
Heidi-ho. I got to get listening to that last one. I'm not sure if you guys took any liberties with me while I wasn't here to defend myself, but I'm a beautiful day in Fort Worth. Happy to be here.
You you do have the Texas the Texas fever going on there, John?
Yeah, it goes on from like July 4th through Thanksgiving. It's called allergy season. Wow. We'll get through it.
So, and the Hawkeyes are opening at home against Utah State.
The Aggies. Oh, for a couple of first downs, right? That'll be progress for us.
So, well, welcome back, John. We're glad to have you.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
The last time we talked to you, we did some conversation on the used truck market, what had happened in the first 6 months of the year. Anything new happening there, John, doing exciting in used trucks?
You know, Keith, the way we kind of left it was the sleeper market was moving towards 2017, 2019 price levels, and we've continued to see that for the last 2 months. So, you know, and actually, we're not getting far away from. By the end of this year, we'll be back at those levels. So, it's still going to continue to be a challenge in the sleeper market. The day cab sector, we kind of talked that we didn't expect it to be quite as bad as the sleeper sector because it didn't go quite as high on the front end. Day cab pricing has also come under pressure here. So, okay. But a lot of islands of opportunity. The mid-range market, we just got done wrapping up August. The volume of mid-range trucks going across the auction block is still negligible. Still a really good time to be in the medium duty / vocational / LFE business. Those sectors all remain pretty strong, but certainly some tension in the line haul sector.
Is the 90-day window still holding true that you can buy and sell in that 90-day market and be okay?
You know, the rate of decline in the sleeper sector is coming down, so it's more true now than ever, right?
Okay.
In a declining price environment, though, you can still buy and sell in the same 90-day window and be okay. And so
okay.
It's really important to keep an eye on your inventory and make sure that relative to your sales rates, about 3 months' supply is what you need. Anything more than that is excessive. Anything more than that, you're going to miss an opportunity to be predatory and buy some trucks at even lower prices in the future. Okay. You're going to be busy selling what you got. So don't miss an opportunity. It's still challenges in the line haul tractor sector, but everything else is still pretty good. So real good. Consistent with what we said a couple of months ago.
Great, great. Thanks, John. Hey, let's go around the room real quick and figure out what's happening out in the market. John's told us a little bit about the used truck market. John, we'll just let you start. What's some good and bad things that you've observed over the last couple of months?
Well, I'm going to lead with, we're getting all these headlines on hurricanes and wildfires and record high temperatures. And I'm going to use that as my launching point here as something good, but also something that's an opportunity. You know, I'm getting ready to go to the Idealies convention here, do a presentation on battery powered vehicles. And one of the things they always do at this convention is they have this thing called Idealies Cares, and they put this montage together of all these great things that dealerships do to support their local communities. And as the headlines kind of suggest, there is no greater need than right now to be doing and having a presence in your local community. And I think a lot of dealerships are doing that really, really well, right? The current weather patterns are brutal. There's infinite opportunities for dealers to help in their local communities, and many of them are taking advantage of these great opportunities. The only caveat I might put on here is, you know, nobody talks about this stuff on their website. Nobody talks about all the things they're doing to be good community servants and whatnot. So, but there's some really great work going on, and I'm seeing some of it, and I'm going to see some more of it next week in Arizona.
Outstanding. You know, you talked about battery-powered trucks, and I don't know, John, if you've read the Wall Street Journal today yet or not, but in their op-ed section, there's one of their headline articles is California's assault on trucks. An accelerated ban on diesel fleets will wreak havoc on the industry. And it's all about the CARB program and how, you know, pushing the move to electric trucks. It's a fascinating article.
It's not just California anymore. You know, CARB has always taken the lead here on this stuff, but the federal government is trying to insert themselves in this, and so there'll be uniform standards across the country. Yeah. And but what that means and why this is different than LNG, CNG, hybrid vehicles, this one's not going away.
Right.
This one is not going away. The bureaucratic and administrative impetus behind this is here to stay, and so electric vehicles aren't just going to be the next passing fad. They're here to stay.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that one of the items that they talk about in this piece is, and they certainly don't name the company, but a company in Joliet, Illinois, wanted to install a charging station for 30 trucks. One of their terminals, and were told by local officials that terminal would draw more power than the entire city of Joliet. And so this whole infrastructure is a real challenge.
Keith, you know what? We're at the very infancy on the cost curve too. Yeah. You know? So there's all sorts of challenges, and I'll acknowledge every single one of them. Will on stage next week, as a matter of fact. But the conclusion is still the same.
Exactly.
It's not a fad that's going to go away, and we're going to have to figure out all these challenges, and they're coming.
Go ahead, Mark.
There was an article in the heavy duty truck yesterday, I think, maybe the day before, about this, and they talk about the fact that they believe that the electric truck has a place in medium duty and local and so forth, and it does help with the decarbonation. Okay, but they also talk about the advances that are being made and could be made in the diesel area. Okay, as much as, if I remember right, as much as 50% cut in emissions if they progress a little bit further there, okay, and they talk a lot about hydrogen again, as well as internal combustion alternative fuels and so forth. So when you say it's here to stay, I believe it is here to stay, but I don't think it's one size fits all. Okay, there's a lot of concern both in the infrastructure, to your point about Joliet. Okay, I mean, that's the biggest thing. I was talking to a dealer a couple of weeks ago, a medium-duty dealer that decided to invest in doing electric, and they've only sold a couple so far, okay, but they had to put in a charging system, okay, and the same thing. It's a small town in northern Alabama, and they don't have the infrastructure, and it's going to take a year to get the infrastructure to this dealership to even have one charging station, okay? So there's a lot of challenges there, and I think in the meantime, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, okay, with hydrogen internal combustion engine, low sulfur diesel fuels, and so on and so forth, that if they put an emphasis on it, could maybe not do as well for the environment. It's electric, but can certainly cut that back some. And I think people are looking at that as well. So I mean, you can read what you want, I guess, on the internet, but it just, your discussion a second ago made me think about that article. Okay.
Well, so, you know, you're right, Mark, and you're making a couple of points. First off, with battery technology, you've got somewhere between 150 and 200 mile range. Okay. That'll never work in a tractor application. So fuel cell technology comes in here on a class 8 side of the business without a doubt.
Yeah.
Interesting times, gentlemen. Interesting times.
Yeah. Well,
Go ahead.
Just to be a good straight man here for what we're going to be talking about today, on the opportunity side or things dealers could be doing better, you know what? I'm not aware of any dealer that really does a good job of educating education and employee development into their annual business planning process. So, you know, the need for training has never been greater than it is right now. This consolidation in the industry hasn't helped. It hasn't been a focus for dealers to grow and spend more, to be more diligent and to be more intentional about using education as a tool to improve job satisfaction, to improve customer service. But most importantly, I don't think most dealers recognize how important education and employee development is in terms of retention and generating employee loyalty. So this is really a much bigger subject than any of us realize, and it's an area where every dealer could be doing better.
Thank you. Mark, let's talk about what you've seen good and bad since the last time we visited.
Well, it just this week, I'm working with a couple clients dealing with high work in process. Okay, and before I talk about WIP and accumulation of WIP on the service side, Keith, what is maybe you can enlighten us as to what a dealer looks at when they look at a WIP report?
I think the first thing that a dealer looks at when they look at a WIP report is some confusion as to what that number is and why it is what it is. I think the WIP report tells a lot of things. I think it also hides a lot of things. You know, the WIP report that shows up on the balance sheet is at cost. It's labor cost. And I would tell you that in my experience is that number typically is not an accurate representation of what WIP really is, whether it's higher or lower. There's no rhyme or reason to it, but that reconciliation that should happen at the end of the month, there's a lot of accounting offices that just throw up their hands and say, I don't know how to do it, and I'm just going to let it sit what it is. And so that balance sheet item is probably not a real number. I think when you start to look at it as a dealer and realize if it is a real number, you realize then that I've paid tax X thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's on my balance sheet, and I've not closed the repair order yet, and so I'm cash out.
And all the parts that went with it.
Plus the parts that go with it. So now I'm cash out on that, and I wonder why my cash flow sucks. And then when I really sit back and take a look at it, and I realize that my tech is $45 an hour, and I've got 2,000 hours, you know, $90,000 of tech time on this repair order, and my effective rate is $175 an hour. You know, I realize that it's not just the $90,000, but now it's $350,000 of labor I could potentially be billing, plus the parts. Now I look at it really big from a cash flow and a profitability standpoint. So I think there's a lot of things, Mark. I think there's, is it a real number? And John being a CPA by training, Alan being a CPA by training, me coming from that accounting office as well, you know, I think the thing that we know is that the accounting office is tasked with protecting the assets of the dealer, which means reporting that stuff accurately. And so if you're not doing that due diligence on a monthly basis at a minimum to reconcile and report, it leaves a lot of confusion and it just escalates from there. And I think it, you know, looking at an email that you and I were copied on this morning that came from a dealer to their service advisors and their service managers, you could sure see the frustration in his communication.
So to that point, okay, WIP has always been somewhat of an issue, and we're pretty good at making it a whole lot better, okay? But this particular dealership, okay, and it's typical of too many dealerships, okay, the upper management looks at the WIP report, and the reaction is to pressure the service department to close some damn repair orders. Would that be accurate, Keith?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that email was saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's that I want some answers, and I want them by the end of the day, and so on and so forth. Okay. And that's typical. When we see WIP growing, management put pressure on the service department to close those repair orders. The real issue is that the structure and the standards and the accountability are in place. Okay. Our dealers install those standards and process and so forth, okay, have much less WIP. Okay. Our rule of twos that we work with, we've talked about before. The last one is close invoice within 2 days of the last tech punch. Okay. But if you look at reality, what's going on in the dealership, because of lack of standards and processes and structure up front, when it gets to the close point, it can take probably an average of 20 to 30 minutes to close a repair order. Okay. And that's where the problem is. So instead of, I'm not saying don't pressure them to close repair orders, but work with them to fix the structure and the process up front, so closing repair orders becomes an administrative job. If I have the structure and the process and the standards in place to where that repair order is live all the way through the process and the customer is authorized any changes or supplements in it, it doesn't take 5 minutes on any DMS system to invoice a repair order and start the collection process to get the money, okay? Whether it's COD or they have an account or however they're paying, okay? And that's really what the pressure is. I guess my bad is there's way too many dealers to do exactly what that email said. And my good is those dealers that have invested either through us or are on their own in fixing the upfront issues in the process and putting the standards and accountability at that point, okay, that goes away and it's much cleaner and they can average that 2 days from last punch at the end of the job. Just one PS here, okay, when you force them to close a whole bunch of repair orders, which in many dealers that's the last 3 days of every month, okay, you are throwing away dollars. Because now I got to close it. I don't know what was done. I don't know what the customer has been told. And I'm going to close it to a minimum of what I think this customer will pay without complaining. Okay. And there's no telling exactly how many dollars that is. But I've estimated for dealers that about 25% of what really happened, okay, goes away and never gets billed. So it's a double-edged sword, right?
Be careful what you ask for. You might get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was when I read that email. That's exactly what I advised our consultant that's working with him. Our advisor is you need to have a talk with this guy, okay? Because he's going to get exactly what he asked him to do, okay? At a big cost, a huge cost. So
that's right. Good point.
Yeah, I'll when I look at the dealer side of it, I understand the frustration, 100%. Right, I get it.
I agree. I yeah. Get it too. Okay. And it's very, very important, probably in the top few things of importance. Okay.
Yeah.
But But instead of pressuring, you know, to John's point, be careful what you ask for. Right. There's a cost to do that, okay? It's not seen, but that cost is there in lower grosses for parts and service, okay? If you spent that time pressuring them by enabling them, helping them build that structure up at the front of the job, it starts with at the write-up, okay? And setting expectations and internal and external communications and having a structure of standard repair. I could go on and on. We've done podcasts on that, okay? But focus on that portion of it, and within a month or two, you'll fix this, okay? You can fix it immediately. Just pressure them to close them, and they'll close them, okay, because they want to keep their job, but at what cost?
Yep, and I like I say, I understand the frustration, but I think also the lack of, and John used the term education, the lack of knowledge, lack of understanding of what that is doing, that what that process that they have in place that's not working, those people in many cases don't understand what the thought process is behind it, right? What does it matter if I close it today or 2 weeks from now?
Right.
And so, and it's always been that way. And so, you know, when you start talking about, well, that can be fixed, there's a lot of disbelief in it too. And so it takes a lot of show me, right? Of show me how to fix it and prove to me that it does. But when it does work, it's beautiful. And it really makes, I mean, it makes everything better. It makes the month-end process better. It makes the, you know, we talk about the rule of twos, and you know, one of our large customers that practices the rule of twos every single day. You know, they describe their month end now as just another day. Just another day. So, you know, my good and bad, it goes along with what John was talking about, which was education. The bad part is that, and I haven't seen anybody per se bad, but I think there, you know, we talk about lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. I'll back up. I will say that I've seen it bad, and the dealer recognized that it was bad. It was, you know, Alan will talk to one of the projects that he's working on when we bring him on here from an education standpoint, but there's a lack of knowledge at a role in the dealership that, number one, you would say, well, that's, you know, that there doesn't need to be specific training for that role. But what we're finding out, there's a lot of education that needs to be for that role. And I think that education piece and the teaching of what to do in the role and in the workflow and how vital that role is to everything else that goes on in a department, whether it's a service advisor, whether it's a shipping and receiving person, whether it's a support person on the truck sales side that's helping manage the accounts and the calendars and the contacts with the people. You know, we do a really not. I'm not going to say we do a good job. I think the industry does an okay job of educating GMs, and a so-so job of educating directors and department managers. But you get below that, and there's not a lot that goes on other than the training of the technicians on how to turn a wrench. And so, you know, I think the bad part of that is that it's there. I think that we have some people that are our customers that are starting to recognize that this education piece goes a lot further than teaching a GM how to read a financial statement or a tech how to turn a wrench. And so I think that's the good part of it. So thanks for your guys' input. I'm always intrigued by what the two of you are going to say, because I never ever know, and it's always good. You know, we are talking about education. We did have Alan Phibbs with us, who's the director of Key Advisors Education Services with us last time. Alan's going to be with us here before. Just as a recap, you know, Alan, I know you're there, so welcome back. Thank you. Can say hi if you'd like.
Hi, if I'd like. Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's good to be back.
I feel wiser after the last 20 minutes or so.
There you go. Well, you are with the Three Wise Truck Guys. Remember that. So.
Oh, I can't forget that.
That's right. So, Alan, just to recap on the emerging leaders real quick for our audience, if you don't mind. Just what is it? Just a real brief recap of that.
Okay. So emerging leaders, it's about a 10-month long program that is designed for just that, emerging leaders among and in a dealer group. It could be existing leaders who have been, for lack of a better term, undereducated or have been primarily educated by the school of hard knocks, if you will. I think we've all had some good learning experiences from that, but that's not the only learning experience. So it is a 5-week classroom based program with virtual touch points in between each class week. Is about 8 to 10 weeks apart, depending on scheduling and availability. And we go through the primary functions, if you will, of a dealership, from financial foundations to parts foundations, service foundations, sales foundations, and then it's wrapped up with the participants presenting capstone projects, individual and group. So it's tailored to the dealer. And so, you know, everything that they use from their DMS to their OEM specific products and technology and so on. And we co-teach, if you will, with subject matter experts from the dealer group. And so we've gotten just a tremendous amount of positive feedback. We have four customers who are recurring. So they have a class that finishes and then they renew with another class on an annual basis. So that's in a nutshell, that's the emerging leaders, Keith. And, one thing I might add is, we talked listening to the three of you and you talk about education and oftentimes I hear from my perspective, and it's kind of a hot button for me. I think, John, you mentioned hot buttons a minute ago. But for me, a hot button is whenever I hear anybody say, well, we can't afford to educate our people. We can't afford to take them out of the dealership or take them out of their job. Well, if you can't afford to do it, can you afford not to? And then the next question usually comes up, well, what if we invest in them, which is what you're doing? You're adding value to them. You're adding value to their business. Well, what if we educate them and they leave? What if you don't and they stay? And I saw, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. And actually, I think long-term, not long-term, it is the differentiator between successful and the most successful and those that are less successful, not just in dealerships, but in business. And honestly, I've been participating in and learning a lot about generational differences today. And it's difficult enough to have five or so generations working in the workplace. But what's most important is to understand the different generations, and education and growth and adding value is an expectation, a desire of the younger generation in the workplace. So it's something to be aware of. It's something to be intentional about. And those that are not doing it, my fear is that they're stepping on their own toes. I heard a comment not long ago. Somebody said, quit tripping over what's behind you. And I think that's right. Keep moving forward and don't trip over what's behind you. So what if you trip over what's in front of you? You can see it. You get up and you move forward. So kind of my thoughts on education.
Alan, you really just said a mouthful there, okay? the dealer's perspective on training is not as an investment, but as an expense, and not as an opportunity, you know, to have better service and better right. profitability, but as a risk that the guy's going to quit or girl and go somewhere right. else. So right. amen to all of that. And Emerging yeah. Leaders is certainly a highly effective program for dealers, and we've had a lot of success with it. Beyond Emerging Leaders, I was wondering, Alan, if you could kind of touch on a couple of other things or some other stuff that we've got up our sleeve where we can use to invest in education for our clients.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for asking. And let me just touch on that investment for just a minute, if you will. I wish I could show this. And this is an exercise that I do very quickly with dealers and leaders in a dealership. And we talk about the expense versus investment. Now, I'm not going to give you a lesson and actually even attempt to change accounting practices. That's not what I'm here to do, but it's a mindset. So if you take all of the money, you know, the time, the fees, the travel, whatever the case may be that you put into investment, and it shows up on a income statement and it's considered an expense. And when you think about the mindset of an expense, the mindset is it's a bad thing. You know, we got to keep them minimal. Well, yeah, if you save your way to nothing, you're going to end up with nothing. But if you change the mindset of that money, let's just say I was with a dealer not long ago and it was $1 million. I said, what if you took that $1 million and your mindset, you switched it from an expense and moved it to an asset? What does that do to the value of their business? It lifts the value of your business just from an accounting financial standpoint. But the other thing it does from a mindset is when you make an investment, whether it's in your business or if you're in a 401k or any other kind of retirement plan, you expect a return and you expect growth. So when you invest in an employee, when you invest in training, go into it with the expect of getting a return and growth. Don't go into it with fear. What if they leave? Well, you know, what if you do it and they stay? Think about how better off you'll be. So thank you, John, for triggering my mind here on that. So we have a tremendous amount of less than what I'd call comprehensive programs. The Emerging Leaders is very comprehensive. So let me just start with Emerging Leaders and I'll start peeling it back. So we do a Financial Foundations workshop, standalone workshop, 4-day workshop by itself, where you can have accounting staff, you can have department managers, whoever you may need that can just learn the basic flow of accounting and how transactions get onto the financial statement of a dealership. We also have what we call department discovery workshops, and much like the Emerging Leaders. So we take the parts segment of that, and that becomes a workshop, standalone 4-day discovery workshop in and of itself. Same with service, same with sales. From a management standpoint and understanding how to lead and manage that department. So, you know, we can peel that back even a little bit further and go deeper into the dealership. We have some sales courses that are specific for, not just specific, but are tailored to parts counter, outside part sales, truck sales, even service sales. And that might raise some eyebrows in service sales. You know, the service salesman in the dealership is the service advisor. They're probably, John, to your point, they're probably one of the most undereducated positions in the dealership because they were, and I'll use, you've heard this story from Mark, I'm sure, is, you know, you're at the right place at the wrong time. And so you're a good tech, you're a good whatever, and we have a vacancy in service advisor, and guess what, you're it. Well, that's fine, but all they know is what they know. So it's they are tailored to the dealership, again, to utilize the system, the DMS systems that they use, the manufacturer tools that are available to them. And I could go on and on, you know, about them. We have leadership content that we use. We certainly have the behavior and communication workshops that we offer. But then the one thing I do want to say is that Alan Phibbs doesn't do all of this. There's not enough of Alan to go around to do all of this. And so we can, again, so we can go from the comprehensive, start paring it down to the department manager, go deeper into those that are, the frontline operations of the dealership. And so let me just touch on one thing that actually we're working with the dealer now to develop together is actually a foreman leadership program. And it's probably, and actually the dealer said this to me, his words, he said, I think it's probably the most undervalued position in the dealership. And I really can't disagree with that. When you think about the shop foreman and what their role is, it's to keep the jobs work moving through the shop. And how many foremen in a dealership have had, how they understand workflow through a shop, and they understand leadership and communication with all the different types of people that they deal with, from technicians to customers to perhaps even vendors. So that one's coming. We're piloting that. We're working on a pilot program with that. And I know Keith, you and Jeremy are working on a pilot in the parts arena as well. Can maybe you share a little bit about that?
So Alan, thanks for asking that about that. The dealer group that requested this, what they were finding was that so many of their inventory problems, whether it was inaccuracies, too much inventory, special orders not getting managed right, everything that's symptomatic, if you will, of an inventory problem, you could trace it back to a couple of areas. One was what we'd call demand integrity wasn't being managed very well. But the other piece, and that's typically on the counter, but the other piece of it was at the inventory control position. And that person that was doing that job for them, well, they were producing the order just fine. They didn't really get the rest of the job, which was controlling and managing that inventory and making it work. So, we've put together, I think it's a 5-month pilot with them. It's all virtual. I think we've got 5 or 6 of their inventory control managers meeting for somewhere between 2 to 3 hours a week and walking through what that role is, and more importantly, what are the things that they affect. So there's financial calculations, inventory turns, things like that, the daily activities that they need to be doing, understanding the reasons why, building the DMS tools to support that, building the other tools that they need to support that. But one of the outputs is a documented way, if you will, of how to do this job. And what does the daily piece look like? What does the weekly piece look like? What is the receiving piece supposed to be? How does the ordering piece flow? And so it's a really interesting education program. And we've done five courses up to this point, or modules up to this point, and the feedback is outstanding on it. It's starting to give them what they want, and you can start to see the light bulbs go on. One of the tasks that we tasked them with the other day was to understand why there were parts that were on the shelf that shouldn't be on the shelf. They never had qualified for a stocking status. What they found was that there was some very, very similar things happening among those stores. And they started to, number one, understand how to see it, what that caused to the dealership in terms of tied up frozen capital, the cost of that. And then more importantly, how could they build a procedure, a process, a reporting tool to keep that from, it's always going to happen, but to minimize it from happening again. So, Alan, that's that inventory control manager program that we're doing, and it's pretty exciting stuff. Mark, I think you wanted to ask Alan about the service advisor piece, if I remember right.
Hey, Alan, you mentioned service advisors. Just FYI, okay, and I'd like to learn more about that, but FYI, I've done a number of times in the dealership working with the service department. I've asked the service advisors quickly to list the top five things that a good service advisor, abilities or skills that a good service advisor would have and why I would hire them, okay? And you know that never once, now I've been doing this almost 34 years, never once is the word selling or sales ever involved in those top five things.
Oh, you're absolutely right. What did you do? Do you start when you were 12? You've been in this business that long?
Yeah, my birthday's backwards now, so, yeah.
Okay. You're absolutely right, Mark. And that's something that some of the dealers that we're working with are actually transitioning and from away from hiring a technical or putting technical people, diagnostic folks in the service advisor position and actually hiring for the selling skills. And so while we're not necessarily talking, you know, when people say sell, it's can be somewhat frightening and it sometimes it is, but not necessarily cold calls. It's, you know, customers coming to them for a reason. And so first of all, convincing, you know, selling the customer first on the value of doing business with the dealership. So, you know, you're not, you know, trying to convince them, you know, to buy one, you know, this over that. It's like, you're already here. So first of all, selling the value of the dealership, you know, we're in a relationship business and anybody that thinks that we're not needs to probably have a conversation with one of the three of the wise guys. It is a relationship business. And so, you know, the next thing they're selling is the value of themselves. And, you know, when, you know, there's a lot to selling and I could go on and I won't. On, you know, how to sell in a service environment. But part of what we do, and, you know, we walk them through, you know, what should the sales process look like? Certainly, you need to address what the customer is coming in for, but, you know, quoting an estimate separately, quoting the repair separately, quoting a complimentary inspection, and then, you know, then communicating with the customer effectively, whether it's through a workflow system or whether it's phone call, email, text, however it is that they're communicating, it's all about being proactive. And so part of the service advisor's sales process also involves their own behavior. And so we provide them with a sales behavior assessment so that they have a better understanding of themselves and then how they can use their skill set to best sell to their customers. So it is indeed about selling, Mark. And, you know, when one of the exercises you talk about the five questions you ask and selling never came up, one of the courses that I deliver for Mack and Volvo, and actually wouldn't have to be Mack and Volvo, it could be anybody, that I would use it, is I always ask the service advisors, how many ROs do you open on an average in a day? And it doesn't matter how many it is. Okay, then you just do the math. So one day times 22 days is a month, multiply that times 12, and they come up with a number. And then I ask them how many of your, and I know the answer today, several years ago before allocations or whatever they call them now, came into the picture. How many of them have salespeople on their team that sell as many trucks as they open ROs? And they say, well, you know, an RO is not sold till it's closed. It's like, no, it's a sales opportunity. And so a service advisor has many more opportunities to sell to any customer than a truck salesperson or perhaps even a part salesperson. And so when they finally see the light, if you will, they recognize and realize like, wow, I do have influence and I have influence on not only the job that's right in front of them, but that person coming back and buying from us again.
So, the, you know, the basics of it is most service advisors, okay, are really good at writing up the customer, okay? Don't always set the right expectations and so forth, but they write up the customer. And when they call them with what's wrong, it's only about what's wrong and how much to fix it. They never talk about the benefits of fixing it, or very few of them talk about the benefits of fixing, which is part right. of the sales yeah. process.
And quite frankly, Mark, it's not even how much. They tell them hours and rate. And,
yeah.
you know, what yeah. a customer wants to know is how much is it going to cost and when can I have my truck? I mean, that's when right. we're looking at when you look at a service department today and even customers, you know, you talk about the value, you know, there's two currencies of value that we're dealing with here. One is typical currency of dollars. The other currency is time. And when we think about the value, and I'm not talking about value and price, they're not the same thing. The value of time is becoming more valuable, not only to the customers, but also to the service department. And then, of course, the dollars come along with it. So when you can really dial into that, the value of that time, can you get a job in and out quicker? You get a whole lot less pushback on price. Not that you won't get any, but it is minimized. Yeah.
And to my point earlier about the structure and the process up front, that's when you set the expectation and it enables you to talk about the value proposition as well.
Right.
Hey, let's make sure, and I appreciate it. Yeah. We could have a good discussion about advisors, but John, you got your hand up.
You know, I was just, Alan, you've mentioned a couple of things here kind of in passing that I think would be really important to our listeners. So I'm just going to ask this to bring a little focus to these two issues.
Sure.
You mentioned DMSs, and you mentioned a specific OE that we're working with. Is our program specific to one dealer management system, or is the training that we do at Key Advisors, is it geared towards one specific OEM? Can you speak to that issue?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So our programs, and I've used this term a couple times, and I appreciate the question, John, because I want to emphasize it. All of our programs are tailored. And so they're either tailored to the dealership, like I described with the emerging leaders and some of the other programs, but we will also tailor our program to a DMS provider or to an OEM. And so we do, we have done workshops and we continue to do workshops that are tailored to, you know, we get a request from an OEM or perhaps participate in an OEM event. Same with DMS providers. You know, we will do that. And, you know, and then I will also add that we do more general workshops, John, that we'll do them for the American truck dealers, for national trailer dealers, as well as DMS providers, OEMs, and even others. And I might just put a little plug in here that if you're going to be at ATD show, I know Keith and Amber have a workshop that they're doing, and I'm also doing one. And, of course, the Key Advisors team will be there in force. So, and then we also have one of our colleagues, advisors, is going to be at the National Trailer Dealers Conference in early October. So that being said, you know, we offer a tremendous amount of products and programs. You know, I'm not going to say we're everything to everybody because we're not. Our expertise is truck dealership or commercial dealership operations, and we will tailor to the needs of our customer. And so, no, they're not just specific to any OE. Now, there are some that are specific, like I mentioned in Mack Volvo, but that course, that service advisor course, could be tailored to any OEM or DMS or dealer group.
Good point.
We do that.
Yeah,
we do
great.
That. So,
thanks, Alan.
So you're welcome. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
So just to dovetail on that, Alan, just you talked about the tailored piece on the dealer education training programs. You'll tailor that to that dealer's DMS and OE as well, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
And any other, perhaps, third-party systems that they use.
Okay.
So that's much like I described with the emerging leaders. You know, we may need to co-teach pieces of that, and so to make it more specific to that dealer, but that's, yes, absolutely, they are tailored.
Can you just give a little? I know we're pushing close to where we like to finish on these podcasts, but I want to make sure that we get a couple of these more questions in. One of them is just some outcomes. What are some outcomes that come out of these types of engagements? Not the emerging leaders. We talked to that last time, but some of these more tailored, very specific role type of engagement.
As I started earlier, Keith, I think, you know, one of the very first things that comes out is, first and foremost, and this is very difficult to measure, but it's certainly an outcome, is awareness. And, you know, whether it's a service manager, parts manager, sales manager, general manager, you know, if it's that specific course, you know, it's there's nothing more gratifying from an instructor standpoint to see the light bulb come on. And so that's awareness. I didn't know that or didn't know this. And so when that awareness happens, then performance results typically follow suit. And so, you know, a lot of what we'll see, we see improvement in not only in financial results, but we just see improvement in customer service experience. We see improvements in employee. John, you mentioned earlier employee satisfaction, where, you know, if you think about a service advisor, you know, from an RO from start to finish, I mean, think of all the people that touches, from the service advisor to the customer to the parts counter to the technician to the foreman and whoever else. When you can get employee engagement and satisfaction, customer engagement and satisfaction, the only way you can go is up. And that's what dealers are experiencing. Not to mention customer retention, employee retention, all of those things, you know, are impacted by our programs, and would be outcomes and results that we see as we go.
Great. Thanks, Alan.
Hey, Keith, I know we're starting to run just a tad long here, but I just wanted to give Alan an opportunity to touch on any future programs we've got coming, or if somebody had a specific need, you know, what the process is for getting in touch with Alan, what the process is for getting in touch with Alan so that we can address those needs.
Well, the easy part to that question, John, is Alan, Allen, at keyadvisors.com is the best way to get in touch with me for any interest. You know, absolutely, if there's a specific need, give us a call, shoot me an email, and we'll be glad to have a conversation of tailoring. You know, we do live in person, we do virtual, we do hybrid events. So, you know, we'll do the best that we can to meet your needs and accomplish the results that you want to accomplish. I think on the horizon for Key Advisors, you know, Keith mentioned the parts inventory program. I touched on the foreman program. You know, probably the new, if you will, that our listeners can be watching for is a learning management system, where we'll be offering online courses, either standalone, where they can subscribe and participate in those courses. They will complement the courses that we already offer, so be on the lookout for that. We're in the in developmental stages there, so we're probably on a, I don't know, I don't want to give, you know, make a promise I can't keep, but I would certainly think, certainly by the ATD show, if not sooner than that, and that we'll have some LMS to share, courses to offer, and then just grow from there. So that's what's on the horizon, John, and I'm sure there's others that you know, I could get a call today that I hadn't even thought about yet.
Yeah.
And certainly, the leadership component is a piece that we offer as well. So always, you know, our listeners keep those in mind.
Sounds like the drawing board's pretty full.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, it's full, but it's still it's constantly drawing. So that's, you know, if you're not learning and growing, you're dying. And so we choose to continue to learn and grow.
Mark, anything else for Alan before we let him go?
No, I'm overwhelmed, Alan. Okay, I had no idea you were that good. I did. Just for the record, Mark, I knew.
You know, my response to that is one of us is not as good as all of us. So it takes a team, and we're a great team. And, you know, when you engage with Key Advisors, you get the benefit and the value of the whole team, just like a customer coming to the dealership.
Alan, thank you for taking time out of your day.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Keith,
I just want to take a minute to disagree with Alan. You're the greatest. You're even when the four of us, you're still the greatest.
Oh, a bit of brown nosing. So
there you go.
Boss.
Mark, you got anything else for us? I thought that was an interesting discussion.
It was very good. It was very good. And it's hard to talk about all the places that we provide education, because all of our one-on-one interventions and so forth were educating as well. So I think if you go back to the beginning of this call, when you talked about, or when Alan talked about, this is an investment more than it is an expense, I think that's kind of the big takeaway. Hopefully it is for our listeners.
John, you got the last word today.
Yeah, here, Mark. Education's an investment, and it's an investment that pays. So, you know, you need to be responsible about where you invest. But I think we've made the argument here today. Got a lot of capability, got a lot of resources at Key Advisors. We can help you. And if that's a custom thing, it's a custom thing. But Alan's got a lot of training options that will add real value to your business. So think about us.
Great. And to all our listeners out there, again, we appreciate you taking time to spend an hour out of your life listening to us. We think we're pretty wise guys. And if you have a subject you'd like us to – what's that, Mark?
I said you said we think we're wise guys. I said just ask us. We'll tell you.
Exactly. If you do have a subject you'd like us to talk about, shoot us an email. You can get us at info@keyadvisors.com. Maybe, Mark, we need three wise truck guys at keyadvisors.com too. Or they can get it right to us.
That's a good, that's, see, what John was saying before you. You're the man, Keith.
Yeah, there okay. You go. I think of all the high level stuff.
Yeah.
So, but let us know if you have a topic you'd like us to explore more. If you'd like to come on the show, we'd love to have you. Let us know that as well. And if you're interested in what Alan talked about or anything else that we can be of service to you, please reach out to us. We really enjoy the opportunity to work with our customers and to work with this industry, and are excited to help you in any way we can. So until next time, this is Keith Ely for the Three Wise Truck Guys, and we're out of here.
Thanks for listening to Three Wise Truck Guys, the podcast from Key Advisors. We'd love to hear from you. Send us feedback, comments, and questions to info@keyadvisors.com.